Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. Hi again, welcome to ITS Podcast, the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society sponsored show, where we bring to you month after month the hottest stuff at the front of transportation science and engineering. This is episode 8, 4th December 2013. I'm Javier Sanchez Medina. We have a fantastic selection of contents for this month's episode. It's our Christmas present to all of our followers. We have a really interesting three-way interview with scientists from Karlsruhe Technical University and Daimler on their amazing challenge on autonomous driving through Bertha Benz Memorial Route in the south of Germany. As a preparation for that interview, we have a transportation history mini section about the historical route Carl Benz's wife drove, making the first long-distance car drive 125 years ago. As usual, we also have a news mini section, this time about the autonomous electric four-seat pods they are using in London's Heathrow Airport, and their plans on using them on an actual British city, Milton Keynes. So let's start with the news mini section. Relax and enjoy.
This is the news mini section for December 2013. Since 2011, London's Heathrow Airport has been using automated pods to move passengers between terminals. They are called Ultra PRT transport pods. You can check out their futuristic look and learn more information through the links in this podcast website. They are four-seat electric vehicles using solar power to operate. Apparently, the use of these robotic transportation systems has proved a success, since, according to electricvehiclenews.com, a small fleet of these pod cars will be deployed in the city of Milton Keynes, a city to the north of London with a population of about 200,000 people, no later than 2015. The plan, if everything goes well, is to deploy 100 of these automated vehicles by 2017. This may be a very important groundbreaking milestone that, depending on its resulting experience, may lead the way for other congested cities in the world to gradually introduce this new concept of mobility. A ride to the shopping center, train station, or to your office will be available for about $3. And of course, can be booked through a smartphone app. The expected infrastructure investment is almost $105 million, but this is not preventing the Milton Keynes authorities from leading the way in this new concept. The idea is not new, but so far nobody dared to try it. We will keep one eye on it. Stay tuned.
Transportation in History, Bertha Benz Route. Can't you believe that when Dr. Carl Benz invented and patented the first automobile in 1886, nobody wanted to build such invention? But Dr. Benz, apart from a brilliant mind, had a brave woman aside that drove his prototype with her teenager sons Richard and Eugene from Mannheim to Forchheim and back to Mannheim in 1888. She showed the courage enough to prove that his husband's invention was suitable for daily use. The route she did is now celebrated as the Bertha Benz Memorial Route. Before her 104 km trip, 65 miles, there had been only very short test trips with mechanical assistance. It is said that the purpose of this trip was Bertha visiting her mother, but that looks very much like an excuse, hiding the real purpose of showing the brilliance of her husband, who wasn't succeeding in putting into the market his fantastic invention. Of course, it was not a straightforward trip. She had to solve a number of problems. For example, she ran out of fuel, and without any fuel station around, of course, she had to find lignin somewhere. That solvent was only available at dispensing chemist shops. So the Stadtapotheke in Wiesloch, close to Heidelberg, became the world's first filling station. She also had to mend a chain in Verusha, replace the brake linings in Boslok Nijlingen, or she had to use a long hat pin she wore to clean a fuel pipe which had become blocked. When Bertha and her sons arrived to Forzheim after being the whole day on their trip, they sent a telegram to Karl and returned to Mannheim 3 days later by a different itinerary. We certainly don't know if Karl got mad at her wife or not, but what we know for sure is that her challenge helped him introducing a number of improvements in his prototypes, like an additional year for climbing hills. And more importantly, he helped to make known and attractive for investments the new transportation system. Is it possible that there is out there some wife or husband listening to this podcast and seriously considering the possibility of doing such an heroic action, but this time with an autonomous car? We'll see. Okay, it's now time for that great interview. We hope you like it as much as we do. Close your eyes. Imagine that one day your car drives itself from one city to another, both of them separated by 100 kilometers. This car can drive through intersections, merge into moving traffic, recognize obstacles, lane markings, traffic signals, and all the technology used is well hidden within a fantastic container, a Mercedes-Benz S500. It's safe, it's beautiful, and it's automated. Now open your eyes and stop imagining. This has already happened. Mercedes drove itself from Mannheim to Forzheim through 24 cities and municipalities just in the last year. Is this magic? No, absolutely not. This is science and engineering working hand in hand. We're in Germany, of course, the homeland of Daimler. Who made it happen? It is a result of the collaboration between Daimler Research and Development and one of the world's most renowned research centers on computer vision for intelligent transportation systems, the Institute for Measurement and Control Systems at the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, or KIT, led by Professor Christoph Stiller. Today we have the great honor to host as our special guests one representative from Daimler and one representative from KIT, who will both share with us some of the details of this new milestone for automated driving. From Daimler we have Mr. Eberhard Kaus, from KIT we have Mr. Julius Ziegler. Mr. Kaus is a research scientist at Daimler AG Büblingen and head of the team Automated Driving in the Research and Development Division Driver Assistance Systems. He is responsible for the project S500 Intelligent Drive. He has been with Daimler since 1995, working on several research and development projects, and he earned his current responsibility on September 2011. Mr. Ziegler, on the other side, is a research scientist at the FZI Research Center for Information Technology in Karlsruhe, where he manages the Department of Mobile Perception Systems. He gained experience in this field by participating in international competitions like the 2007 DARPA Urban Challenge, where they were finalists, or the 2011 Grand Cooperative Driving Challenge, won by their challenger. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's start with Mr. Kaus. Eberhard, can you please introduce yourself and your company to our listeners?
Yeah, sure, I can. Yeah, I'm 42 years old, married, and I work for Daimler since 1995. I studied electrical engineering at the University of Darmstadt. It's in Germany. My major field of my study were control theory and synchronous and asynchronous machines. Yeah, what can I say about Daimler? One of the most inventive car, truck, and bus manufacturers in the world, and one of the well-known brands of Daimler is certainly Mercedes-Benz. And let's say with this research project, we wanted to underline the demand of technology leadership.
Great. How about Mr. Ziegler? Julius, can you please talk a little bit about yourself and your group, just to set up a context for our listeners?
So, hi, Javier. I'm Julius. I'm representing the FZI Research Center for Information Technology here in Karlsruhe at KIT. I have been working in the field of autonomous driving for approximately 7 years now. And as you said, I was part of Team Anyway, which took part in the Urban Challenge already in 2007. and we were also in the Grand Corporate Driving Challenge of 2011. At the moment, I advise a group of three PhD students, which are all more or less on automotive projects. And actually, most of our projects now are industry funded. So we had projects with most German car makers and suppliers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So
Great. This
was briefly who I am.
Thank you. Everhard, the Berta Benz community route is a very nice way to show the world what Daimler is capable of in the field of automated driving. This episode, we have had a short section explaining the history of that beautiful journey that Berta Benz did to show the world a breakthrough in automation. How do you at Daimler see this milestone, 125 years after Berta Benz? Do you think generations to come will celebrate this new historical challenge alike?
I really hope so. And I think our success with this project could be reasonable expectance that people will keep that milestone in mind, hopefully. And this success, I think, fits best in the history and the tradition of our company, which is the inventor of the automobile. And we are very proud of that. But it's, of course, a responsibility to continue setting new mobility milestones today and also in the future, I think. And we are convinced that whenever the driving situation is complex or driving is boring, for example, on the motorway or traffic jam, we can help or support the driver with systems like this. And we already did the first step on this way with our stop and go pilot in our new S-Class, which is the first semi-autonomous function we implemented in our S-Class. And you can, up to 30 kilometers per hour, you can drive today autonomously, for example, in the traffic jam with our new S-Class. And now with the project you mentioned before, we are also become the first manufacturer to use a near series sensor system to drive a distance of 100 kilometers in rural and urban traffic conditions in a vehicle operating completely autonomously. And I think with this system, we are providing an insight or a look into how autonomous mobility might look in the future. And the road you mentioned before, we have chosen a road which combines, I think, high level of difficulty on the one hand and a very emotional factor on the other hand, based on the historic achievement of Berta Benz and her first long distance drive with a combustion engine driven vehicle. So the route we chose, it might sound a little bit funny, but when we took the decision, we did so without a detailed knowledge of the road and had not fully appreciated the extent to which the narrow road through the many towns and villages along the way represent a real challenge for an autonomous driving system. So let's say choosing a different road would definitely have been easier. Mm-hmm. But we wanted a real-life scenario, and in doing so, we are showing that autonomous driving is also technology possible on roads other than motorways.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. Everhard, you are the project leader for the autonomous drive. To let our listeners understand the complexity of what you've done, could you please tell us how many people and for how long with which partners you have been working on this project? We want to visualize the size in terms of scientific and engineering workload.
Okay. We started in 2011 with the project, and we formed a team of about 20 research scientists and charged Professor Stiller and his team to develop, for example, new and robust methods of localization and trajectory planning algorithms. So, and the localization task, I think Julius will talk about it a little bit later in detail, was one of the most fascinating tasks. Building an accurate map, and we need an accurate map for driving autonomously, of the whole road was one of the most important work packages. In the first step, where a lot of research do, and we did it together with Stiller and his crew, and by the way, Julius from my point of view, was the key member of the team. And regarding the localization, Stila had to develop further methods of video-based feature extraction so we can fill in these details in localization layers in our map and finding them again by driving on the route and localize ourselves. And the second and last, not less important step regarding the map is to find a supplier who can build these accurate maps in the area of serial application and serial production of an autonomous driving system. And we did it for the Bertha Benz Road with HERE. HERE is a part or a brand of Nokia, and we are planning to cooperate with Nokia and HERE for serious application of accurate maps. And another important part of the project was the testing part, because for that task, we built up three cars, one E-class and two S-classes. And since the middle of 2012, we did our first test on public roads with our E-class. And from 2013 on, we did it with our two S-classes. And prior to that, we tested without exception on proving grounds. So when we thought we are ready, and then we went to the public roads and tested all functions on the system in closed loop on public roads. And that was really challenging. And with functions, I mean, for example, the environment perception, localization, behavior generation, trajectory planning, and the control of brake, gas, and steering. So, yeah, that's really challenging.
Thank you. Well, what would you say were the greatest challenges you had to face during this project?
Okay, as I said, the testing was one challenge, but let's divide your question in two parts. One aspect is the time aspect from the project, and the second aspect is the technical aspect. The time aspect, I think that 2 years are a really small amount of time to realize such an ambitious project. And the time was the most challenging part of the whole project because, yeah, let's say an adjustment of the last milestone, the drive of the Bertha Benz Road in August, yeah, could not be shifted. So there were no doubt we had to finish in August. So that's one. And the technology challenging aspects, for example, were first the environment perception, which means generate a complete representation of all surroundings, and we have to do that as reliable as possible. Another tricky point are traffic lights. Might sound a little bit funny, but the recognition of traffic lights phases under different lighting conditions and the correct pairing of individual traffic lights with the traffic lanes represents a really major challenge of the whole project. And for example, another one is social interaction. Sometimes it results, or our driving results in funny situations, such as when having stopped at a zebra crossing, a pedestrian crossing, the vehicle gets waved through by the pedestrian. Yet our car socially continues to wait because we fail to anticipate such politeness when we program the system. So we wait and wait and wait and have to manually drive through the pedestrian crossing. But surely Julius can add another challenging aspect and can give an overview of the parts which were done by the key IT.
Sure. Julius, could you please illustrate which parts of the project exactly were contributed by KIT?
Okay, sure. So KIT contributed basically three separate parts to the system. Ivan mentioned it a bit already. So the first part was a special digital map that we designed that had to be very precise and accurate and detailed. It was used for driving and routing and important parts like that. Then equally important was localization relative to this map. And last not least, we did the complete motion planning part for the project. And in terms of workforce, we had four scientists working on that project actively for the last 2 years. That means four people who were funded more or less directly by DINRA. But of course, I think it's fair to say that this number does not really reflect the actual workload you need for such a project, because of course, a lot of groundwork has already been done here at KIT over many years now, and a lot of know-how has been collected. And I don't think that normally you would pull this kind of project off with four people in 2 years only.
Mm-hmm. Julius, to drive autonomously, all our listeners would agree on that the car needs to know exactly where it is and what's around it. I know it may be hard to summarize this into a single answer, but could you please give us some ideas about how you implemented the vehicle positioning capabilities in the S500 intelligent tribe?
Yeah, that's of course the decisive question. So let me try. So firstly, our basic concept that we used for driving was to drive map-based. That means put everything that you think the vehicle cannot easily see by its sensors into a map that you generate offline. So the most important things that we put into the map were the location of road boundaries, for example, and even more important, the topology between these road boundaries, so how they are connected at intersections, for example. And already if you have this, then you can basically look up a driving corridor for your car at any point in time. And if you now detect something by sensors, then that only means that that driving corridor is narrowed a bit. So you see that the trajectory planning is already very constrained in the first place, and this makes motion planning much simpler than if you would start without a map. And secondly, to make any use of a map at all, you must be able to localize yourself, at least in relation to that map. And we already knew by experience that GPS would just not be good enough for this purpose. So a lot of work, both at DINRA and at KIT, was put into this task of self-localization, a video-based self-localization, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic idea here is that you record a video of the whole track once by driving it, and then from this video data, we generate an appearance model of the track. And so that means that when we are later driving the road again, we can match our current camera image with that appearance model, and so know precisely where we are within this model. And this actually works up to a couple of centimeters.
Mm-hmm. Right. Eberhard, there are any findings from this project that will help you along your way to an in-series application of autonomous driving technologies? And is Daimler also expecting the year 2020 as a breakthrough year for autonomous driving, as some other car manufacturers currently do?
First of all, I think autonomous driving will not come overnight, but we try to realize that in stages. The first step, as I mentioned before, is already done with our stop-and-go pilot in the S-Class, and of course, the next steps, be sure, are in preparation. We want to be the first manufacturer to bring other autonomous functions in series production vehicles, and you can expect that we will reach this goal within this decade. Point of view, the first suitable step will be on the motorway, and I think we can reach this goal within this decade. And back to your other question regarding the findings from the project. One goal of the project was to gain important insights into the direction in which we need to further develop our current systems in order to enable autonomous driving not just on the motorways, but also in all the traffic scenarios, like little villages, cities, and so on, with pedestrians and bicyclists and so on. And even we ourselves were quite surprised at just how far we got using our present-day sensor technology. But and this is a key factor of the whole project. We use sensors which are close to series application or already in series applications. And with this know-how, we think much time and effort is needed to teach the vehicle how to react correctly in a host of traffic situations, because every part of the road was different, and every situation is at every time unique. So you cannot repeat in a normal traffic situation the same situation twice. So I think that's one difficulty we have in normal traffic situation. Every situation is unique, and we have to do with this situation and train our algorithms in that way that we can handle these situations. And furthermore, I think we have to do a lot of research again to find solutions to handle, for example, different weather conditions, to provide high available and reliable autonomous functions for the customers. And I think that's the one reason. For that is one reason, because I think we will need a couple of years to handle such situations, different weather conditions, and as I mentioned before, and for example, the high availability and reliability of autonomous systems.
That's great. Well, we now need to make a short break. We'll be back soon, so please stay tuned.
Hello again, just a short announcement. We are starting a new contest to find the best follower of this show. This is our way of thanking you, our listeners, for helping to grow this podcast by spreading the word. The contest will be opened on the first day of 2014 to April 30. During this time period, we will determine who is the most active listener based on activities to inform others about ITS podcast. The winner will receive a brand new iPad, so you can listen and follow the show on a fancy new device. In order to be eligible for the contest, each entrant must send proof of his or her dissemination efforts to itsspodcast@gmail.com. All dissemination efforts will be taken into consideration, but must be documented to be included in the contest. Examples of efforts include printed promotional flyers, email blasts to your department, university, or corporation email distribution lists, or social media. Just please be sure to email itsspodcast@gmail.com copies of your flyers and mails you have sent, and share your Facebook, Google+, and Twitter posts with our show so we can track your work. The contest winner will be announced on May 2014 at a special edition on the first anniversary of the show. So don't waste another minute and start spreading the word. Okay, let's get back to our today's interview.
We're back again talking with Mr. Eberhard Kaus from Daimler and Mr. Julio Sigla from KIT, talking about this new milestone on automated driving. Julius, in 2007, you successfully took part of the DARPA Urban Challenge with Team Anyway. We all agree about the big progress that this competition has brought into the area of autonomous driving. How would you compare these achievements with your recent ones?
I think that's easy to answer, actually. So in the Bertha Benz project, we had much tighter constraints on basically everything. So some of these constraints, I think, are quite obvious. I mean, if you just look at photos of the cars that were used back then in the Urban Challenge, they all had huge laser scanners on top, all kinds of exotic sensors, And if you look at the S500, on the contrary, it's not at all recognizable as anything special. Not even when you sit in it, I think. It has four passenger seats, perfectly normal. Well, then, scenario-wise, Urban Challenge was much, much simpler. So everything was happening on a kind of military base, a locked-up place. There were no pedestrians, no bicycles, nice wide roads all of the time, no narrow gaps, perfect conditions for GPS, and so on. On the Bertha Benz route, on the other hand, it is much more variable, as you probably know. So there are narrow passages, there are actually trams in the cities, there are bicycles, there are roundabouts, blind corners. It's altogether, it's very, very difficult in cooperation. And just another factor that made the Bertha project much more difficult is just that we were driving in public traffic. I mean, that means that you must have a much higher degree of reliability, because if you have an accident, you actually hit real cars with real people in them. While in the Urban Challenge, you would have destroyed an empty car in the worst case.
Mm-hmm.
And altogether, I think that you cannot stress enough this sensory constraint. That was, in my opinion, the biggest challenge to make do with only the cameras and the radar from the series car.
Mm-hmm. Eberhard, let's talk a little bit about the sensor technology you used. There is very little GPS aid, no lasers, no LiDAR, no sonar, but cameras and radars. Why is this the case? Cost? Size of sensors? Will computer vision be the key technology towards automated driving, even knowing its problems with dust, atmospheric conditions, night lighting, etc.?
For this project, we have only used sensors which can already be found in our series production vehicles and whose suitability for everyday use is proven. We try to focus on sensors, not only vision sensors, but also radar sensors, exactly to be a little bit independent on weather conditions. And these radar sensors and cameras, I think are suitable for that. And we use no laser scanner, and we use the GPS information only to set up our localization algorithms at the beginning of the drive. During the drive, we usually don't need GPS. So we use affordable sensor technologies and state-of-the-art control units, only a few more than in the S-Class, in the Series S-Class. And we think only if autonomous driving will be affordable, it will be a success. Because who wants to buy a system that costs $70,000 or something?
Mm-hmm.
So it must be affordable. And we are convinced that only then it will be a success. But of course, we monitor development in other sensor technologies for sure. And we have a look on the possibilities associated with this other sensor technologies.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the specific profile of Mercedes-Benz customer, especially for those more expensive models, would accept automated driving assistance systems, even if it implies losing part of the driving experience? I mean, some people are talking about new roles where the driver loses a bit of mastery by cooperating with a new integrated smart systems. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's not about losing, it's about winning. Above all, autonomous driving makes traveling by car safer, but also more comfortable. That's one of our major goals by developing autonomous driving system. It reduces the burden on the driver during monotonous driving and traffic jams, for example, or on the motorway. And furthermore, it offers older people and people with disabilities the opportunity to stay or become mobile. At the all the commuters, for example, and long-distance drivers who are unwilling or unable to forego in individual mobility will certainly appreciate the benefits of greater safety and comfort, and we are very convinced they will. It is important for us, however, that responsibility remains with the driver, who can switch off or override the driving assistance system if he or she wishes that. And whenever the driver wants to drive itself, he can, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Julius, according to Professor Stiller, assistance functions to increase driving safety and environmental compatibility will be integrated in serious vehicles soon. Could you please explain what this has to do with environmentally aware driving? Can the automotive driving be tweaked to improve its environmental impact?
Okay. Well, I think that it's clear that driving eco-friendly was not our primary goal in this project. And Eberhard, I think that you will agree that our primary goal was to drive at all and to drive safely and to drive the whole track. The secondary one was perhaps to drive as comfortably as possible. Yeah, but and now, of course, what we think is safe or comfortable in this context was somehow put into some formula by us. And of course, you can add terms for fuel consumption or CO2 production into this equation as well, as long as you understand the physical connection between these quantities and how you drive your car. But I think that this is understood.
Uh-huh.
And so the simple answer would be that I think if you can make a car drive automatically, then you can also make it drive eco-friendly if you want it. But of course, waiting for automatic cars for eco-driving to happen is perhaps a bit far-fetched. I think that we will see assistance systems for this very soon. So I don't know if you have ever tried to personally to optimize your driving style for maximum mileage or for eco-friendliness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have done that, then you probably know that this can be very, very stressful. You need to be constantly aware of what's going on around you. You need to anticipate what others will do. You need to be in the right gear all of the time, and so on. And I think there will be systems will soon be around that can help with these kinds of tasks. For example, it's easy for a car to be aware that there's a sharp bend coming up, and then the car can signal the driver to step off the accelerator ahead of time. So this will save some fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's clear that the key to economic driving, whether manual or automatically, is to anticipate what will happen in the near future. And just this prediction part was also very important for the automatic driving in our project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we've learned a lot on how to do this. And I believe that soon cars will not only know that there is a bend coming up in a minute or so, but that they will know what will happen in the mere next seconds. And I think that this can be used to assist the driver in economic driving.
Okay. Let's do a final question to Eberhard Kaus. Eberhard, looking 10 or 20 years ahead, what is your personal vision of what the car of the future will look like?
Oh, tricky question.
Yes.
when I exclude the law aspects, I hope that in 10 years, autonomous driving, especially on motorways, is a realistic goal. And I hopefully not only luxury cars. So in 20 years, very difficult to say. I think it depends on if the people will accept such systems. If they accept such systems, hopefully such systems will be a matter of course. Let's say a standard system as navigation systems today. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends. It depends on if the people accept this kind of systems. It's very difficult to say what will be in our cars in 20 years.
Okay. Now, how about you, Julius? What are your expectations for autonomous driving?
Yeah, so I agree mostly with Eberhard, and I think that we will see automatic driving in the future, and mostly, I think there are mostly two fields where they can help. The first one being comfort, and the second one being safety. And on the side of comfort, I strongly believe that there will be automatic driving, at least in very simple structured scenarios, like on motorways, for example. But I think that the even more important benefits are to gain in the field of safety. And I think that we will very soon get to the point where automatic systems will be better at avoiding accidents than humans are. And I'm sure that we will see systems that do evasive actions all by themselves, and very soon so.
Okay. Well, that is all for now. I want to say a big thank you to both institutions for this fascinating interview. We really thank the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology and also Daimler for your participation in this ITS podcast episode. Thank you very much, Eberhard Kaus, and thank you very much, Julius Stiegler.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Goodbye, and thanks again.
Yeah, bye-bye.
And that was it. We expect your comments to tell us how you liked it. We are also expecting your wish list for future topics to be included in the show, events to be covered, and personalities to be interviewed. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society, website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain, soundtrack developed by Rubicon, language advisory by Manuel Arbelo and Professor Sean Williams from Clemson University, South Carolina. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening, and drive safe.